G'day and welcome to the Build Me a Brewery podcast. My name is Chris Hayton and this is part four and our final episode of the Marketing Design and Beer Media segment. In this episode, I chat with well-known figure within the Australian craft beer industry, James Smith, who was the founder of Good Beer Week and online magazine and news resource, The Crafty Pint. Originally from the UK and working for a newspaper over there, James and his wife then moved over to Australia in 2008. After being introduced to a few people in the brewing industry, he started to realise that there was a few breweries and a small craft beer scene developing in Australia around the time, but had very little media coverage on it. In 2010, he then launched Crafty Pint, and only a few months after that, Good Beer Week, which was a week-long of events related to the craft beer industry. In modern day, Crafty Pint is an industry-leading news publication for the craft beer scene in Oz, and Good Beer Week has grown to become a national event being taken over by the Independent Brewers Association. In our chat, we discuss the media options available to new and established breweries that can take advantage of getting their name out there and create a bit of buzz about their beers. Also, we talk about the rise of craft beer in relation to the rise of social media and much, much more. So I'll leave you to it then. I hope you enjoy my chat with James Smith from the Crafty Pint. Well, welcome, James, to the Build Me Brewery podcast. Thanks for coming on, mate.
No worries. Thanks for inviting me.
And how we got in contact, yourself and Mick Wass, one of your journalists here in Sydney. He did a really good write-up on the podcast and what we're trying to achieve with the whole brewery project. And if anyone's ever interested in checking that out, go to your website. But basically came from there and wanted to explore the angle of beer media and you being pretty well known in the beer industry with Crafty Pint and also Good Beer Week. I want to dive into some of the angles that brewery owners can take, utilizing and taking advantage of what's out there in Australia at the moment for the brewing industry, because we were talking offline that it's probably an underutilized thing from new breweries. Like we were talking about some new breweries open up in Sydney and, you know, you weren't even aware and why they haven't reached out to someone like you. It's a little bit silly. So I guess it's just putting it out there, what's available and how they can utilize it. But before we get into all that, mate, sure, you don't need a massive introduction. You're very well known and I've already given the audience a bit of a heads up, but tell us a bit about your career background before Crafty Pint and love to hear about the story of Good Beer Week and, you know, the birth of Crafty Pint and maybe even if you've got some humble beginnings of homebrewing days or anything like that, mate, take it away.
Oh, no homebrewing other than a couple of shared hands-on experiences when I was back doing the BJCP course 2010, I think it was, when I first started writing a little bit about beer and pubs and stuff for the Age and the Sunday Age down here in Melbourne. And I was like, I should probably, I guess I was already thinking about doing Crafty Pint back then. The wheels were in motion. I was like, I should really learn some more about beer. So did a couple of brews with people then, one of whom's now at Brick Lane and was at Public Brewery, but no brewing background. I sort of came from the journalism aspect. So back in the UK, after an initial job out of uni that I wasn't too keen on, I went traveling for a while, knowing that I wanted to get into journalism when I went back, not beer journalism, I'll admit, and then worked for a newspaper back in the UK for maybe the best part of 5 years, just writing about all sorts, like ended up as a features writer and plan was always to go sort of hit the road again. So after we got married, my wife and I applied for residency over here, moved over here in March 2008, and I just thought I'll try and get some work at one of the newspapers over there, but as you're probably aware, print media has been dying on its ass for quite some time everywhere, and there was probably less jobs here to start with. So I ended up very thankful to my wife for landing some full-time teaching work pretty quickly and was just pitching for work left, right, and centre. Was doing, you know, copywriting for an architect and did a tech column for the Sunday Age for 5 years and stuff on property and a bit of stuff on pubs and beer and everything. And then the beer side of things was within a few weeks of moving here, my wife's first or second teaching job, there was another girl in her class who was the one-on-one helper for this kid with extra needs. And they got chatting and this woman, Kate, mentioned that her boyfriend worked for a brewery. My wife was like, my husband's, one thing he was sort of a bit down about from moving to Australia is that the beer here is pretty crap. Because I always used to drink, you know, real ale and, you know, nice European beers back in the UK. Lived in Munich for a few months. And so I had some Coopers and stuff and wasn't aware there was what the craft beer, this was, 2008, so the craft beer scene was starting. So it turned out her then boyfriend was Mountain Goat's first ever rep, Tom Delmont. So he's now the guy that runs Fixation. A few weeks later, we ended up being picked up by them from outside some dodgy pub in St Kilda on a cold, wet night. And taken to Richmond. And I remember walking through the doors of the warehouse with Mountain Goat and just seeing this brewery and this bar. And it was like, it was tasty beer and this real buzz. And I was like, okay, this is unexpected. And yeah, we had a great night. We were going back there frequently, became really good mates with Tommy and all his mates, and got to know some people in the beer industry. Did a bit of sort of, you know, asking around, realized there was other small breweries out there. And then you jump online to get some more information. And there was very little information out there, very little that was up to date. And then, you know, picked up this guidebook that was being published at the time. And wherever my wife and I went sort of on trips around Victoria, we'd book in to go to all the breweries. And we found that some were like claiming to be breweries, didn't have a brewery on site. And it was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. So I guess there was the excitement that there was good beer out there, but also the fact that there was this lack of coverage. So I guess it was sort of, I'm a journalist looking for something to write about. And there's an industry out here that's clearly growing and is new and is exciting, but there's not much going on. So yeah, just sort of the idea came from then, took a while to put together, you know, bouncing the idea off a lot of people, going through various names, sort of, you know, finding out who the right people were in Victoria and Melbourne to sort of chat to, and, you know, the guys that founded the Tap House and, you know, some of the well-established breweries, and just seeing what they thought. And so that probably took, I don't know, we moved in March 2008 and Christ Pint went live September 2010. So yeah, it took, you know, more than a couple of years to get things off the ground. And there'd been a bit of other sort of beer writing going on. And then Good Beer Week happened really quickly after that. So a few months later, I was at Beer Lux in the middle of Melbourne one evening, and some mates were having there was two of the guys from Bintani. We're chatting to two of the guys that worked at Beer Lux at the time and saying, oh, there's no Beer and Brewer Expo this year. There's going to be people in town from all over Australia and overseas for the Beer Awards. Like, we should do an event to market. And they knew I'd just launched this website. So they came to have a chat and were like, well, would you help us publicize it? It was like, yeah, yeah, of course. So, you know, and then a few nights later, back at the same place, they're going, how about we do a whole week of events? And so I was like, yeah, sounds like a good idea. And like 9 weeks later, we did something with 50 odd events. I think most of them had the same people at them. It was like this sort of moving feast, but it was just this incredible spirit. Like, it was like this moment where everyone that was there felt, okay, there's something really going on here. Like, you know, there was just this real buzz of excitement. And it was one of those moments, I think, where, certainly it wasn't the only one, but it was one of those moments where everyone that was involved went, we've got something going on here that's actually got legs to it. And so, yeah, so that then developed from there. So it was, you know, I think it was completely voluntary for the first few years. I ended up being festival director up until year five, I think, by which stage, you know, there was a bit of income coming in. And then obviously Gabs had been run as a small thing at the Tap House in 2011. And so the guys from the Tap House approached us and said, hey, what about, we've been thinking about moving Gabs to a bigger venue. How about we tie it in with the Beer Week? So Gabs, the second Gabs and the first one at the Royal Exhibition Building, was on the opening weekend of the second Good Beer Week. And then everyone was so broken from that, we said, hey, can you move it to the end of Good Beer Week so that people, you know, aren't recovering until halfway through? And that was how the two of them sort of ended up pairing up. And I think, you know, that's worked really well together, in that you had these sort of events celebrating the whole of the Melbourne and Victoria, well, the whole of the beer scene, but especially the whole of, you know, Melbourne's venues and breweries, culminating in this massive sort of, you know, unique festival and event. So yeah, I was involved in that very heavily, well, you know, festival director up until about year five. And by that stage, Crafty Pint had sort of grown a fair bit. We had a second kid on the way. I realized that something had to give, and it couldn't be Crafty Pint because that was my, you know, becoming my main sort of thing. So stepped down from festival director, still, you know, involved, you know, in a, I guess a lot of the same team is still involved running it. Now it's part of the IBA. Still do Pint of Origin there. But yeah, my whole focus the last few years, I think I stopped doing any other work other than Crafty Pint probably 3 or 4 years ago. And now we've got a team of, I guess, if you had to add it up, sort of 3.5 staff and then a whole bunch of freelancers and other sort of people on retainers and stuff running Crafty Pints. I could do with 2 or 3 times as many, but we don't have the money. So we just have to be very resourceful, which was, you know, always the case with Good Beer Week. And I think it's the case with a lot of small businesses in craft beer. Like, you have to make go a long way. And, you know, a lot of people do, thankfully.
Yeah, no, you've been around the scene for so long. I remember listening to an interview you did with Matt Kierkegaard, probably at the time where you were launching Good Beer Week or Crafty Pint. I was playing catch up on some of their episodes, and I listened to their back catalog when they first started out doing the podcasting. And I remember coming across a story like yourself and how you came to where you are. So, because the industry definitely needs, you know, commentary like Crafty Pint. And I know Matt Kierkegaard and Pete Mitchum from Radio Brews News do a really good job. And
well, the amazing thing was actually we both started within a few months of each other. You know, there had been there was other stuff around, but then they launched. But when I was having the conversations with people about launching this website, I think it was Cam at Mountain Goat, one of the founders. He said, "Oh, you should speak to this guy Matt Kierkegaard in Brisbane because he's launching this website as well." So, you know, they launched early in 2010 and I was a few months later. And the good thing is there's some crossover in what we do, but I think there's also a lot of, there's a difference in approach and, you know, they cover areas of the industry that I don't and vice versa. So it's actually been, I don't know, I think for a small beer scene, which is obviously getting a lot bigger, I think it's been quite lucky to have those two, you know, sites. Plus, you know, Beer and Brew has been around for a long time. Yep. And then more recently, you know, Froth doing, I guess, sort of more sort of hunter-friendly sort of approach as well. Yeah, I think we've dovetailed pretty nicely together and hopefully given a lot of people a voice that other small industries like this might not have had. Mm.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly why I thought getting you on and talking about this aspect of, you know, obviously this kind of form part of the marketing angle for brewery owners, but talking about how they can utilize outlets like Crafty Pint to be heard and get their beers out there. So, but another fun fact about yourself, mate, keen to hear about, well, I know that you're a voice of many breweries around Australia, but if you were to pick one, I'll give you an option to pick two or three if you want, or if you don't want to play favorites, maybe favorite beers, styles or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, you know, the funny thing is I could pick a lot. There's been so many. I look back and go, you know, like Mountain Goat, obviously from the start, were very integral in my, you know, early days in craft beer. And I was very lucky when Cam and Dave were still there that they invited me along on a couple of their birthday trips, like flew me up to Darwin to go and stay on this tiny little island in the middle of this river, this crazy guy, Kai. And God, we were like following this crocodile around this little island with beers in hand. And God, we all could have been eaten. You know, so there was that, you know. I've been, Stone and Wood guys were very supportive early on. Then I've got like Tommy, you know, who's still really good mates, who's now got Fixation. But, you know, there's loads. I've got La Serene is about 800 meters of the crow flies from my house. And Saison's probably my favorite style of beer, you know, variants of Saison. So I've been very lucky there. And actually, I'm going away camping this weekend with like the owner of Molly Rose and the owner of Noodle Doof and the head brewer from Holgate. So, you know, it's amazing how you end up with so many close friendships in this industry. And then, you know, I've become good friends with like Matt at Boat Rocker. And I have to say, of all the venues you can drink at in Australia, I think Boat Rocker's Barrel Room is probably my favorite place. It's just, obviously, Matt's got an amazing array of beers across a whole bunch of styles. And, you know, there's the stuff that's on tap plus all this incredible bottled stuff. But they've also now got their still in-house from when they merged with Hippocampus out of WA. So you can go there and just have this incredible array of fantastic flavors, you know, under the one roof, in, you know, sat in the shadow of walls of barrels. So, you know, that's always, I sort of don't go there too often because it tends to get a little bit too tasty. But yeah, no, I'm like really lucky to have a lot of friends all around Australia. And we're very lucky these days to have so many amazing beers, which, you know, back when I first was getting into it, what, 12, 13 years ago, you know, there was different beers and there were some good beers out there, but it was very hit and miss. And now I reckon it's more uncommon to come across a beer that's not that good than it is to come across something good. So we're in a pretty good place at the minute, I think.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. Like I've probably only become very attuned to the craft beer industry the probably last 5 years. And I know that 10 years before that, that's when it was all kicking off, you know, 2005, between 2005, say. Yeah. And like you said, Mountain Goat, Little Creatures, you know, they're some of the early trailblazers that sort of sparked a lot of craft beer enthusiasts and punters and even people opening up their own breweries here in Australia. So
yeah, I don't think people can undermine like the work that was done there. I think, you know, it's one of the things we, not overtly, but maybe subtly try to do with Crafty Pint is tell this, like we did the end of 2019, we did the Crafty's Advent Calendar and like featured 20 to 5 different people throughout December. And it was, a lot of them was kind of going, here's people you need to know about who've helped build the industry in some way. Because it's great that so many more people are getting into craft beer now. And it's great that so many people are coming in because of hazy double IPAs or milkshake IPAs or pastry stouts or fruity sours or whatever. And it's all very exciting. But I think, you know, we have to recognize the work that was done by a lot of people. I don't think Mountain Goat, you know, they did turn a make any money for about 12 years or whatever, but kept slogging away at it, you know. And it's funny how you look at sort of when Pacific Ale keeps doing well, for example, in, you know, the hottest 100 and people are bagging it, and it's like, you don't understand that's still a really good beer. And what that has actually done and what they've done for the industry is phenomenal. And you're like, again, you mentioned Little Creatures, you know, like how many people were turned on to become a brewer by Little Creatures Pale Ale, you know, 15 years ago or 20 years ago. So, you know, I think a lot of the people now, I think the brewers recognize it, that they're standing on the, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants sounds a bit cheesy, but, you know, everything's been built upon other people's hard work. And that's why it's always so good when you see the likes of, you know, Richard Watkins is still on the tools that Bent spoke 25 years after getting into the business and making cracking beers. Paul Holgate, you know, is still, you know, I think they'll be coming up towards 25 years soon. They're still putting out some cracking beers, you know, and they've got their big brewery in there, and, you know, they're always still, you know, evolving as well. So, you know, it's always, you know, great when you see people who would have got into it when there was no craft beer here at all and probably had to learn on the go and still got businesses going now.
I'm sure Richard and Ben Spoke are pretty busy these days.
Yeah. You know, it's been an amazing story. I, you know, Richard was at, you know, Wigan Pen for a long time, won a couple of champion Australian brewer titles and was making, you know, funky sours and barrel aged imperial stout well before anyone else was, but, you know, making one barrel or five hex at a time. And you'd only get it if you went to this brew pub in Canberra, unless, you know, someone secured a keg for an event elsewhere. And then, you know, when you open Bent Spoke, you kind of think, oh, probably he'll probably want to follow the brew pub approach there. And now they're in every state and, you know, growing fast and, you know, awesome. Yeah.
Well, like I've mentioned a couple of times already in our little brief introduction, is, you know, the whole point of getting you on is talking about the importance of breweries utilizing beer media, and you know, we'll probably dive into some of the marketing strategies. I know that your strengths are more in line with that journalism and the commentary about the beer industry, not necessarily the marketing aspect, but beer media is definitely a tool that should form part of a brewery's marketing strategy.
Yeah.
You know, utilizing that, getting their brand and beers out there. But tell us, do you think marketing and brand development in the brewing industry, especially for new breweries, do you think that it is something of a, I guess, a neglected thing to begin with in the early days of a brewery setting up? Like they're focusing on just opening their doors, dialing in a core range and just getting people through the doors. But marketing probably isn't really in their budget. They're probably doing some guerrilla stuff. Yeah, share some comments on why you think it's so important for a brewery.
Yeah, I think definitely more so. I don't think you see so many brands or breweries or brewing companies coming to market now without having thought about how they, you know, what their story is and how they look and, you know, what their approach is and what their market is and who they want to reach. And I think if people do come in having not thought of that, you know, maybe if you've got a captive audience somewhere in an untouched suburb or in a regional area, then it might not matter so much. But if you have any intention to try and, you know, snaffle tap space or get into the fridges of rotational bottle shops or whatever, if you don't have the complete package, you know, something that looks good or at least presentable, I think you're going to be on the back foot from the start. You know, you do see breweries often rebranding pretty quickly or, you know, polishing what they've done. I remember even like, you know, Modus Operandi, they came out of the blocks flying, and they were, you know, champion Australia, winning all these champion Australian indie titles within months of putting their first beers out. But they actually had a completely different look for their brand when they launched, but they decided to rip it up and change it to what it is now, that much more sort of, you know, modern, clear look within the first year. But, you know, so you'd have thought because they were such a success story from day one, you kind of assume that they had that. And I think they kind of did have the whole package, but they decided very early on, you know what, we need to change now. And I think we're seeing that more. I mean, it's actually sort of one of the banes of my life at Craft is how often people are rebranding or changing the look of their core beers these days, because it means we need to try and update their pages on in our directory. I will admit there's a few pages that probably haven't been updated. But, you know, I think it's happening less and less. And I think, I mean, from my point of view, when we've sort of hosted panels along the lines of what you're doing with this podcast, is I try and get people like you're doing from across the whole industry just to get the message across that essentially you do actually need to think of everything. And, you know, if you want to be a small regional brew pub, you don't have to think of everything in terms of distribution and packaging necessarily. But depending on where you want to come in, you know, you have to not only have, you know, a brand story, I guess, you know, and a genuine story, and, you know, have thought through that side of things, and then have your beers and your recipes and know what you're into in terms of what you're going to brew. Ideally, you probably want to at least have had a brewing consultant in, if not getting in a brewer with experience, because especially if you're in an area where people have other craft beer options, if you open a place now and people come in and your beer is a bit wurty or it's not, you know, it's just not right, people aren't going to come back when they've got dozens of other, no matter how nice your venue is and how good the food is or whatever, like there's a lot of people out there know what they want. So I think, you know, people need to at least get a brewing consultant in to come and check their recipes early on and what have you. You know, you don't want to leave it too long these days. But yeah, so I think it's just a case of as best as you can afford, you need to have thought about the whole, probably listen to the whole of your podcast series and take on board all the elements that you need to take on board. And, you know, it is probably a lot to think about, but you don't want to chase a dream and invest a lot of time and money and energy and take risks and let yourself down on something not necessarily simple, but, you know, if you do come out to market and you don't tell your story the right way, or you just don't look good and bottle shops don't want to take you on, or people see, you don't want to have a false start. Mm-hmm. You know, you might get away with it, but there's no, you know, you need to sort of think about everything, the full package as much as you can. And you might not be able to have all the places in the back end of your business. It might take time to have a lab in place, or to, you know, have someone who's working social media, or, you know, I'm still doing far too much myself at Crafty Pint, but, you know, you at least want to think about as much as you can before you get started.
What I'm learning is that if you don't plan for those things from the beginning, or at least give it a thought, and because it's not in everyone's budget to own a canning line from word go. So that's something that you'll probably build and expand into. And the same with a marketing team. You're not going to be able to afford a 800K salary for someone to hit the pavement and talk to all the people to get your beers out there. And you know, you're going to be someone that's going to be taking on many, many hats in the beginning. But you know, one thing that I am learning from this is that not one person can do it all. And if you plan to do that from the very beginning, at least for the first 12 months, you know, you're not going to see your family. You're going to be extremely stressed. The whole brewing side of things is probably not going to be that fun. And you'll just burn out. So I have ambitions to have a couple of mates in this project with me. We'll see how keen they are when we ask them to show us the money. But there's so many different angles and perspectives that need to be considered. And what I'm finding is marketing, you know, you could have an average or mediocre product, but if your marketing is on key, it can make that product seem a lot better than it actually is. I mean, beer might not stand on marketing alone, but I know that there's a lot of really good beers out there that a lot of people don't know of because, you know, the marketing's non-existent, but there's a lot of mediocre. And to be honest, there's a lot of shit beers I've had that have really good marketing in, and I just think, well.
Oh, you're probably more likely in this day and age, and you know, when social media is so, you know, prevalent in guiding people and what have you, that if you've got a good look and you're right, if you can market a product well, people might jump on it because, you know, hype is probably paying a bit more of a, you know, of a influence than it really should in the industry. I mean, that's why we're trying to get back to doing our blind tastings more regularly. I mean, I'm not saying that certain, the beers that don't fare well in one of our blind tastings, it might be an older batch or whatever, but, you know, is to sort of go, we're just going to taste these beers without preconception, without knowing what they are. It's just we're judging the liquid in the glass with our senses, and that takes away all of that, you know. And it's interesting, you know, because, yeah, marketing can take you that far, and I guess that's our way of trying to say, oh, by the way, these beers are good. You should check them out. You might not have heard of them. How far it goes, I don't know. It kind of works both ways. You, because the industry is more developed, you kind of have to come in more developed yourself. You know, you can't just go, all right, I've got my recipes at home, I'll put some decent beer out. You know, hey, I'm this guy. Me and my mate be making some beer. Like, that's not enough anymore. But at the same time, because the industry is more developed, there's a lot more you can look at, and there's a lot more people you can talk to who are more than happy to share their learnings. You know, as you'll have found on the podcast, I'm sure people are happy to give up their time and come and talk to you about what they've done. And, you know, so whilst it might be a higher standard, if you want to hit the ground running, you might have to hit the ground at a higher standard than you would have had to 10 years ago or 15 years ago in terms of the full package. But there's a lot more people out there and a lot more events you can go to and just chat to people and say, hey, this is what we're doing. And people will give you feedback, and some might give you better or more feedback than others, but people generally will find the time to chat to another brewer and want to help them. Because I guess if you look at the greater good, no one wants someone coming in with a shit product that might put people off the wider craft beer industry. You know, you want everybody to be making good beer. Yeah,
absolutely. I think it's the greatest thing you can commit for the industry, to be honest. Yeah. You know, putting out shit beer, especially when you're trying to convert the unconverted. So, listen, I know we've dived in about the importance of marketing and branding, but can you dive into a bit more detail as to why it is so important for a brewery?
I mean, almost sort of stepping back from that maybe is that, you know, I guess the core of your brand story has to be who you are or, you know, what you want your business to be about. I mean, the easiest thing is if your story is fantastic and unique anyway, and you can go, here's who we are. A lot of the, because there's so many breweries out there now, there's probably quite a few that have got a lot of the elements of their story the same, but there's going to be something different about what you're into, what your other hobbies are, where you're based or whatever. And I think, you know, that might not be the key element of what your brand becomes, but I think you have to understand what makes you or your team or your location, whatever it is, what it is, you know, and you have to understand, I think, what makes you unique and what your story is and stick to it. I think there's been some brands have come along over the years who, whether, you know, it could be invented brands from the bigger breweries or it could just be some people going, oh, you know, we'll get involved in this. We'll create this brand. We've got this story and we've got a good look for it. But if there aren't roots to it, it's very hard to maintain. And I think in any industry like craft beer, any sort of craft based or, you know, where authenticity is supposed to be, you know, a key part of the industry, if your story doesn't have roots, if there isn't something genuine to it, you'll get found out. You know, you won't be able to maintain a story if there isn't really anything much to it. And I think it's easier to keep working hard on and building a business if it's genuine to you. Like, you know, obviously, you know, you might be tied into it because you've sunk a ton of money into it and you have to make it work. But at the same time, it's much easier to put the long hours in and to keep believing if there's something you can believe in. So, I've said that a lot of the time. I mean, whatever your story is, that's your story. And, you know, however you might end up presenting it, like, that's who you are. That's what your brand kind of is and has to be. You can't fake one, or if you do, it's going to be a much, much harder job, I think. So I think that's kind of key. And that's me saying it because I'm a journalist and I like telling stories, and so I enjoy good stories. You know, but that's effectively what, you know, we are at Crafty Pint, more than maybe hard hitting journos. We're storytellers, and the great thing is this industry is full of good stories, and I think that's sort of key to making sure you have a strong brand. I guess is having the story that you believe in, and other people can then believe in.
Well, I think that's a good lead into what is out there in the beer industry in terms of beer media in Australia. Mm-hmm. And so are you able to, I guess, tell us, obviously people know about your story now with Crafty Pint and Good Beer Week, but tell us about what else is out there for breweries to take advantage of and other people that are commentating on the industry.
It's amazing how much it's changed, you know, since I got involved. Like I said, there was, you know, Beer and Brew has been around as a print magazine for a few years longer than Crafty Pint's been going. And you've got other sort of industry mags, you know, like the Shout and stuff like that will cover beer stuff as well as the wider sort of booze industry. There's been a lot of blogs have come and gone. Some are still around, not too many. I think more people that were sort of starting blogs 10, 12 years ago are now starting podcasts. But so that's been the evolution from written word to audio and video. And there's a growing number of those out there. And quite a few of them have got legs on them as well. And the likes of, you know, the Beer Healer. And brewers down in Tassie, there's plenty of them out there, and they all offer the chance to sort of have a platform to, you know, their audience. They're out there as well. And then you've also, there's been, you know, Froth Magazine based down here in Melbourne. I think Emily's on a bit of a hiatus at the minute after getting a promotion job at the Age. So then I guess there's trying to get into, then there's, you know, you've got your sort of either list basing or more, wider, you know, you sort of more community, like sort of Broadsheet and Urban List and those kind of people. You know, they'll often do coverage on craft beer as well. And they'll always be looking, you know, if there's a new opening, that they're looking to tell the story, send someone out as well. Because, yeah, I guess, you know, they want to have as many different places featured on their platforms as possible. But, you know, the options there, and there is, you know, there is semi-regular beer coverage in the main media as well. I still find it's a bit hidden, missing what you get. I mean, back when I first started out, I was trying to push the Epicure as it was in the Age to have like a weekly or a fortnightly beer column, and I have a theory for it. And what you found was, still to an extent, in sort of more mainstream media, there's kind of this seems to be like three stories. It's like, oh my God, women do drink beer, and some of them brew it as well. Wow, you know, or it's like, oh, look at these crazy ingredients that brewers are using, or Jesus Christ, isn't craft beer expensive? And that's kind of, you know, they seem to be the three stories.
Yeah, I think the Grassy Knoll got featured, didn't they, about a month ago about their avocado beer.
It does feel like sometimes with the mainstream, there's a bit of a lack of willingness to actually tell the real stories. They're looking
more, the gimmick types. They see that, how cool is that, you know.
Exactly, you know, and I think it's great if you can get that sort of level of coverage. Obviously, you know, many more people see the Sydney Morning Herald or the Daily Telegraph or the Herald and Sun than would see the Crafty Pints or, you know, Brews News or what have you. But, you know, the beer media is speaking to beer people, you know, and generally you can choose to take subscription models with what I do, you know, and you can sponsor Brews News and what have you. But essentially you could also come to us and say, hey, we're doing this. And we'll go, oh, cool, we didn't know about you. Right, we'll do a story on you. And, you know, we're always looking for, you know, whether it's new breweries to write about, interesting things happening, someone working in spontaneous ferment, whatever. You know, I can't say guarantee we'll get to every story, but there's contact pages on our website. There's contact pages on, you know, on the other websites. You can get in touch with people doing these podcasts. And I guess don't be afraid to approach any media because, you know, I guess these days there's probably a bit of a mistrust in media, quite understandably. I despair frequently at the sort of the way that the wider media world is going. But, you know, certainly within our industry, there's a lot of genuinely authentic people who are wanting to help be part of building awareness and education and, yeah, just the audience and, you know, the size of the beer industry. So, you know, anyone can drop us a line, and if we're interested in your story, we will tell your story, and it won't cost you anything, and it will be out there. And that's how this thing operates. Now, you know, we spoke about it beforehand, and I've said it, you know, a number of events. It amazes me how many, you know, new venues might open or breweries come along who don't think to contact media. You know, and I guess, you know, the world is changing. Social media has become such a bigger player, and you know, you can take social media and get a following on there. But why not do everything? Why not, if there's possibility to get your word out there, get your story out there, because who knows who might read a story and go, oh, either I'll go and visit it, or they might contact their mates and say, hey, did you know there's a new brew pub just opened in the next suburb or whatever? Or it could be somebody from a local pub or bar who will get in touch and say, hey, I'd love to try your beers. So, you know, it doesn't hurt to use every opportunity out there. I mean, you don't want to spread yourself too thin and try and, you know, jump on TikTok just because, you know, that's the latest rage. But a bit, you know, within your means in terms of resources and money, just look at all the options that are out there. Certainly look at all the free ones, you know, the ways that you can get reach, and we're one of them, and that's what we do. You know, if we can get someone out there, we can, or we'll just jump on the phone and find out a bit more about you and tell a story. And it really, you know, there's no catch. You know, it's just a case of dropping us an email or dropping, you know, Matt at Brews News or Claire at Brews News or whatever, just dropping someone a line and hopefully we'll pick up the phone. And, you know, you don't have to have a marketing company or a PR company to get in touch with us. You just jump on the website and click email this person.
Well, that's exactly how we got in contact, really. You know, I thought, oh, I've got Buckley's chance of getting my story out about the podcast. And I think I was talking to Scott in sales and marketing, and he said, oh, I'd love to hear about your story. I'll pitch it towards James. And, you know, you did a great article on us, met up with Mick. And the same with Matt Kierkegaard. Found his mobile, gave him a call, been listening to the guy for years. And I even said to him, I think, oh, if you could see me now, I'm blushing, mate. I've been listening to you for so long, and now I've got you on the mobile. So, and he did a nice little shout out for us just before we were launching with this podcast. So, and it's as easy as that, just like you said, you know, it's there, utilize it. You're there to tell stories about the beer industry. So, like you were saying, do encourage a lot of new breweries and anyone related in and around the beer industry to sort of reach out if it's a worthy story to be told.
Yeah. So, some people get in touch with us in advance, and then we know they're coming up. And it's like, you know, if you can get us samples of your first beer so we can taste, we can add that in the story, you know. Yeah, the earlier we can write about someone new, kind of the better for us, because it's nice to have something out there.
Yeah.
You know, when it's fresh, and it's also better as long as you've got your business running smoothly and your beer's dialed in relatively well when you launch. But yeah, you know, by all means, if I can put a pitch out for Crafty Pine, it's like, just if you're out there and you're making beer and you haven't spoken to us, just send an email to James at Crafty Pine or jump on the contact form on the website, or whatever. Like, we're we're here for people. So
Yeah, well, hopefully, I mean, there's averaging quite a few hundred people listening to this each week. And I'm sure that if they're going to be listening for an hour plus at a time, they're keen people that are looking at opening their own brewery. I think so. So hopefully you'll get inundated with stories soon.
Fingers crossed.
and just talking a bit about the growth of craft beer and also the growth of social media use, do you think there's a relationship there between the two, the growth of both of them and the growth of social media use helping with the growth of craft beer?
Yeah, well, I think if you even step back before the rise of, you know, the real significant rise of social media, I think just the rise of the internet itself really helped the craft beer industry develop. So it was far easier sharing of information. You know, people could listen to, you know, read brewery stories from the other side of the world or listen to podcasts from America or email brewers. You know, there was just a much easier sharing. There weren't just the same few books that people were relying on or doing courses or speak. You know, there was this whole sort of democratization of information and it's funny, you know, you'd sort of, what it still happens that a trend might start somewhere and move somewhere else, but generally, in a way, the craft beer industry, wherever it's developed, whether it's in parts of Asia or, you know, down here or, you know, in the UK or what, or Canada, you know, if something new comes out, the chances are it's going to be happening in all of those scenes within a few weeks. Because it's, you know, there is just that just instant sort of sharing of knowledge. And, you know, social media will have certainly aided that in terms of spreading it. But I guess more so it's given brewers another way outside of, you know, traditional media, outside of having to try and get people to their venue of finding an audience, whether it's through hashtags and, you know, on Instagram or through beer groups or whatever on Facebook or, you know, on a lot of people were on Twitter. You know, there were a lot more beer people on Twitter probably 10 years ago than there might be now, but because, you know, things move or whatever. But I think it definitely helped communities come together online in terms of anyone interested in beer. It helped breweries and venues to an extent, you know, have a direct line to their customers, whether they, for good and bad, I reckon sometimes. And it's certainly given people another means of, if you've got a new release coming, you can just put something out there and go, here's an image of our new beer and here's what it is, and we're launching it at the brewery at this day. You know, it's definitely helped break down barriers, probably in some ways taken the beer industry in some interesting directions. You know, it's definitely helped foster more hype. There's some pretty crazy things going on in the beer world that you might drink them and go, does exactly what it says in the tin. I have no idea why anyone would want that, but, you know, horses for courses. But yes, it's changed the industry hugely.
So do you feel that craft brewers have evolved over the years with their approach in using marketing and communication tools like social media?
Yeah, well, I think people have had to, and I think we've seen a few high-profile examples of when it goes wrong, just how damaging it can potentially be to your brand and your business and actually to the wider industry. Often bigger media will pick up when something goes wrong because everyone loves a bit of controversy. So I think, you know, it's very important that breweries think about how they use social media, who they might work with on social media, you know, the messages they're putting out there, because things can escalate very quickly if you get things wrong. Some people aren't necessarily polished, but if it's honest and it's behind the scenes content, I think people really enjoy that. You know, there's some people out there who are just remarkable. You look at Willett Van Diemen, you look at the photos he's taking and the content he's putting out there that mixes both the romanticism of his farm brewing and his spontaneous brewing and the barrel aging with his family shots on the farm. Like, you know, he's doing just this absolutely wonderful job. He should probably be on TV, you know, as much as he should be a brewer. But I think, you know, there's no sort of one size fits all, but people definitely have evolved. And if they haven't and they don't really necessarily understand how to use it, it might almost be better sort of leave it to one side until you do, because, you know, there's probably more danger in looking bad or getting things wrong than there is in sort of taking a risk. But yeah, I think it's like with everything in the beer industry, everything's evolving. Understanding of how yeast work on one level to, you know, the glassware that beer is being served in bars, like everything's changing over time and what people expect. Maybe faster, you'd have to say over the last decade or so, the way the beer world has changed globally. I can't imagine there's ever been faster change in beer's, you know, 10,000 year history. So it is pretty hard to keep on top of things. And I know we aren't as on top of everything as we should be in the social media world at Crafty Pint, even though we're in the wider media realm, because I'd have to be able to afford a full-time specialist to be on top of everything that's going on. Yeah, I think we all have to evolve in many ways constantly, really.
I'm actually quite surprised that that's the number of staff and that you actually have. I just thought you had a lot more than what you're actually saying, because the amount of content you guys put out and the amount of in-depth, like, I just thought there was a whole bloody massive team behind you. So kudos to, you know, all the work you put out.
I think it's it was the same thing with Good Beer Week. I think, you know, in the early days especially, people thought, you know, you want to give the impression that it's a highly professional organization run by, you know, a big team and well-funded. Well, having said that, it can backfire on you because people just think, oh, they're minted, they're fine. Whereas actually, it's the old story of the, you know, the duck. It looks serene on the water, but underneath everything's paddling like crazy. So you can hopefully put across that you're a bigger and more professional organization than maybe reality is.
Oh, listen, at the end of the day, if you're producing good content, what does it matter? I mean, I think if anything, it adds more to your brand and your reputation in the industry. If you can do it on a smaller scale and put out that amount of content, then small is better than bigger, to be honest. So just following on from some of the earlier questions around some techniques and methods that breweries can take to sort of improve their marketing and branding and exposure to the public, it's my belief that effective marketing for a craft brewery is not just, you know, relying on weekly beer posts or attending beer events. So can you talk about all the different aspects a brewery owner should be considering when it comes to marketing and sales for their brewery and beers?
Often it will depend on what you have as, you know, at your resources, you know, but certainly if, you know, if you're very small, then the best thing probably is activate your social media and, you know, have a mailing list as well. You know, get people to sign up to your mailing list through your website or when they come into your brew pub, you know, just have something on the bar or an iPad they can sign up to, or put something on your menu saying, hey, you know, follow us on social media here or sign up to our newsletter. And, you know, if you can drop something into people's inboxes every time you've got a new beer coming out or once a month or whatever, telling people what's going on, then that's pretty effective because you're taking the middleman of social media or whatever out the way. But, you know, certainly if you can afford reps or brand ambassadors, whatever you want to call it, I guess part of their job is to be going into venues and retailers and trying to get fridge space and taps, but it's also telling your story and, you know, hosting tastings or being at events or what have you. And I guess from coming back to the media side of things is let us know. It might be a case of at the start sort of letting media know that, yes, you exist, but then it might be a case of going, hey, I've got this event coming up. We can stick it in our diary and share with readers, or you've got a new beer coming out that we can put out to our tell readers about as well. So there's a lot of things that can be done depending on your budget and be done for various levels of cost, from free to whatever you want to spend. I've had various sort of brewery owners and reps say to me over the years, the most effective marketing they can do is to get beer into drinkers' hands. So whether that is through doing tastings in venues or being at events or doing giveaways either through a third party like Crafty Pint or through your own website or whatever, just ways of getting people to try your product. Because if you back your product, then you're going to hope that people will try it and come back as well. So, you know, we were talking about sort of marketing before and how good brand or, you know, good looking can might pull people in and keep them going. They want to be associated with your brand. But at the same time, if you've got great liquid, then hopefully people will acknowledge that as well once they've had it and come back.
Well, I know that also a lot of breweries these days are doing beer collaborations as well, where, you know, doing combined can designs and saying that two well-known breweries have put their own two cents on this seasonal or special beer that's, you know, one time only, limited edition. So you're seeing that a lot more in the industry.
Oh, the whole chase for new and for limited edition, you know, it's tied into that wanting, fear of missing out, or the hype thing as well, and wanting to sort of get your hands on something limited edition. I mean, we're actually meaning to do a big feature on collaborations for a while. I just haven't found the time to do it yet because you don't have to go back that far for their, you know, it'd be only, actually, I think we mentioned it in one of the 10 years of Crafty features last year. I think the New South Wales brewers that were around all got together back in something like 2005 and made a beer together in the Hunter. But essentially, like, it was such a rarity back then, and now it has become very commonplace. And I think from my point of view, again, you know, what I like to see in a collab. Obviously, you want there to be some really tasty beer, but there has to be a reason for it, I think. There has to be a story behind it. And I think, you know, most of the times there are, but often might be a shorthand way of trying to sort of do something different without necessarily being any justification for it. But certainly, you know, where there is a story behind it, I think that's always the best way to do them rather than just doing them for the sake of doing them.
Yeah, I'm completely in agreement with that. You just see people just, oh, they're really trending that brewery. I want to jump on that bandwagon. Like you said, there needs to be definitely a good story behind the collaboration.
Yeah. And going back to the whole... I think some breweries have been pretty smart. You know, you see more of it now, but certainly, you know, I guess some of the early ones doing stuff like, you know, bar series collaboration. You know, Bridge Road might have been the first to do that, you know, where they invited people from a venue up to come and make a beer at their brewery so that, you know, the venue got to know more about that brewery and had a sense of ownership around the beer. You know, so I think that can help, you know, foster relationships with venues. I have heard some breweries say, though, that these days they're getting, you know, they're fielding several calls a week from venues going, hey, will you make a beer with us? You know, and it's sort of like, well, who are you? You know, why should we? There's a danger that it can become sort of watered down a bit. But, you know, if there's a good story behind it or a good outcome from it. But it's been interesting, you know, you've seen brewers do stuff, you know, make beers with their graphic designers or whatever, you know, so trying to celebrate different aspects of the industry. Because back in the early days, the craft beer industry pretty much was the brewers making the beer and their venue and the drinkers, like, and a handful of venues that sold their beers. There wasn't really much else going on. You know, they probably designed their own logo and print their own labels, you know. So now there is this whole huge ecosystem of interrelated businesses and talents and skills that make up craft beer today. So it's interesting seeing, you know, I think it's always good to acknowledge, like as you're doing through the series and we try and do through our collaborator series, of, you know, acknowledge the growers and the suppliers and the graphic designers and all these people that, you know, without them, the industry wouldn't look and taste and reach, you know, as good as it does and reach as far as it does.
No, absolutely. And there's so many working parts to it and how the industry has evolved. You know, there's people that providing support to the craft beer or just the beer industry in general, that's all they do. They can broaden their services to other industries, but they just specialize in craft beer, like Jared from Craft Accounting. You know, he looks after predominantly craft breweries on the accounting aspect. You know what I mean? So there's so many specialized services and a lot more support for it these days. And I guess the whole theme of this episode and also this segment is there's so much out there that people need to be tapping into. And it doesn't need to be a $50,000 budget set aside for marketing. There's a lot of cheap and cost-effective things that breweries on the tightest budget can be doing. And just leaning into that sort of shoestring budget type question, any other cost-effective methods that you would sort of part ways with, you know, maybe like guerrilla marketing, I don't know if that's the right word for it, but things that just out of the box, things that they could be doing.
I think people have been, I remember one drop in Boston in Sydney, they did for one of their beer launches earlier this year, they contacted a whole bunch of, you know, beer media and people with prominent Instagram accounts, got the beer to them early and said, can you please post about this at 6 o'clock on a Friday or whatever at the same time. So yeah, costing the time and the postage and the beer to get it out there. But I think I'd imagine most people did that and jumped out and sort of gave a bit of a blitz. I guess, you know, you're amplifying the noise just by giving a few cans away to people who are obviously appreciative and happy to do it and be part of it. The one thing you need to be careful with, just like we're saying, you know, I guess my one piece of advice about using social media is don't fuck it up. That's the main thing you want to do because, that has to be sort of the one main thing. I think is that if you're looking to sort of do something that might go viral or some sort of stunt, is again just make sure it's. I'm not saying it has to be completely tasteful, but just think through the implications of what it might mean for your brand if you misjudge it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, it could cripple you going forward. But
people can bounce back from things, but you know, it's tough enough. Making it in craft beer, the margins are small, there's a lot of competition. Don't make things harder for yourself if you don't have to.
Well, want to also get your industry insights, mate, like you report on a daily basis, provide really good commentary on the beer industry. I'm sure you've dived into many different alleyways of the beer industry and craft beer scene. what's the future outlook look to you for the craft beer and beer in Australia?
Oh, I think a year on from everyone being absolutely terrified this time last year as to what COVID was going to bring, or being in denial at this time last year, I think that, you know, there was probably pretty much 50-50 split in February as to whether you know anything was really going to happen. I think things feel, in terms of beer and brewing industry as a whole, I think more positive than a lot of people feared. I think we have been pretty lucky in Australia in terms of the damage. Yes, we've had the two lockdowns here in Victoria. They've been pretty savage, and we're just hoping that this other little outbreak at the minute doesn't go any further. A lot of brewers adapted very quickly, and you know, those that were already in package and had good connections sold a lot of beer because people were drinking more booze last year. I think a lot of people were able to switch and get stuff into package pretty quickly, and then there was a lot of support from, you know, retailers that could stay open, and even the big retailers changed what they were doing to make it easier to get smaller brewers through their stores. And I think those, even on a smaller scale than that, who had a good community around their brew pub, they were able to find ways of still getting their beer into their loyal followers' hands, whether it's through growlers or what have you. So I think people rode it out for the most part better. And, you know, speaking to OJ at HPA, I've spoken to him two or three times over the last few months, and, you know, he says that their Aussie brewers are buying more hops than ever. And he says, as a percentage of their overall future orders, they've never been selling more Aussie hops to Aussie brewers in the past. You know, there are some people, you know, there are a few that have changed ownership or have been struggling or what have you. But I think from a brewery perspective, I think things have actually, at this stage, are actually looking pretty good. I think the push across everything for Australians wanting to support local, it's not just in beer, but it certainly has happened in craft beer. You know, with the Keeping Local Alive campaign and just being part of this wider support move to support local has really helped. I think we won't know for a while the full impact is hospitality. When you're a producer, if you can find a way of getting your product to market, you're kind of okay, even if you had to change your business. But if your business is selling other people's product and you are closed, then you've got a bigger issue to deal with. And there has been support for, you know, those sort of businesses. Some have gone under or have taken big hits. And I don't think we'll know until JobKeeper's finished, until, you know, maybe there's been some rental sort of, you know, agreements, whatever. I don't think we'll know until later this year how bad the impact has been on HOSPO. So that's where the greater concern is, in terms of how many venues will survive in the same way they were as well. So it's harder sort of to predict the future, because we have had such a crazy year.
Yeah, well, it's the whole yo-yo effect of businesses being told they have to shut their doors and then coming back and then having to shut again. You know, this wave of opening and shutting, it can, you can imagine it's crippling, you know, local cafes and independent businesses. And it'd be a shame to see a lot of those small businesses that add a lot more characters to the local scenes.
But I think, you know, with more people working from home or finding, you know, whether full-time or part-time, it's probably going to help bring, you know, suburban centres and suburban pubs and cafes, you know, might end up doing very well from it. You know, the bigger issue will be, you know, in areas where there's a lot of, where I was at a pub earlier today in South Melbourne, and, you know, they had a great October, November, December, but when everything opened up in Melbourne, and then because where they are, a lot of their lunchtime traffic would be from local commercial operations, and, you know, people, office workers or whatever, or, you know, people at local factories coming in for lunch, and people aren't back in a lot of those businesses yet. So, you know, that, but these areas where, you know, whether it's especially, you know, your CBD early morning cafe that's open from 6 till 2, if there's no office workers, like, you know, that sort of thing is really gonna struggle. So yeah, I mean, that side of things is harder to forecast. What would be interesting, you know, in terms of going back to the beers themselves, like the previous couple of years before COVID hit, there were more and more new stars coming through and more new releases coming through the whole time. And, you know, pretty exhausting, I'd imagine, for brewers, certainly exhausting for us trying to keep up at Crafty. And, you know, I remember when COVID hit, it's like, well, that's probably going to slow down. And then, of course, it went the other way, because people were like, well, people have got stuck at home. They've got a bit more money to spend if they've kept their jobs. And they're looking for something new and fun to do when they're in lockdown. So, you know, more people were happy to spend $15 on crazy beers and give it a go And so that side of things went even more insane last year. And it'll be interesting now that pubs are back open and things are getting relatively back to normal, whether that sort of continues or whether it's like, well, actually, we're selling a whole bunch of our pale ale or our IPA through taps now that pubs are back open, so we don't need to be doing so many crazy limited releases. So, you know, that'd be interesting to see where that settles. I think it was already getting a little bit out of hand sort of by early 2020. Then after a little sort of pause in March, April, it went even more nuts. So it'd be interesting to see where that ends up sitting. And then on the wider picture is, I think in terms of overall styles that people are going to be drinking, we're nowhere near topping out the growth of craft style beers. And, you know, that could be craft style beers made by James Squire and Little Creatures and the brands that have been acquired by Asahi and Kirin. But, you know, at the same time, you know, there's a lot of them are still making bloody fantastic beers. I had Bolter's Cryomofo West Coast IPA last week, and that's one of the best beers I've had in a while. You know, and so, you know, if you take it together, independent and non-independent and formerly independent beers that are hoppy and the beers that the big brewers weren't making 15 years ago, the taste for that is going to keep growing. You know, it might be at 15-16% now if you include independents and non-independents. That's probably going to go push past 20 quickly enough, hit 30%, I'd imagine. And I guess the question for smaller breweries is, how much of that are we going to own and how much is actually going to be, you know, craft style beers made by the big guys? So I think that, you know, that's if you look at the broader trends, that's going to be, I think, the way things are going to continue for some time yet.
Yeah, well, it's like the taxing incentives that were given to a lot of the breweries in the middle of COVID last year, they've sort of pulled them back again. It's going to be interesting to see how they sort of adjust and continue on with those changes, because I know that helped a lot of them out. But you talked a little about beer trends. Did you want to talk about any specific ones there at all?
I mean, with them specific beer trends, it's almost like the way I've felt about it for the last few years is more of everything constantly. You know, it makes me think of that Arcade Fire track, Everything Now. Like, that's almost like how a lot of brewers are and how a lot of, you know, the noisier, more adventurous sort of beer drinkers are. They just want everything now. And, you know, if you look at, you know, I was just thinking when I say, you know, we're getting more and more craft style beers as a bigger percentage of the market, but at the same time, there's more and more independent small breweries looking to put out good lagers, whether it's, you know, whether it's a, you know, Munich Helles inspired, you know, easygoing, you know, clean lager, or whether it's something a bit more of a bitter pilsner, but still very traditional. And even some of the more, I guess, talked up breweries who are well known for their hazy double IPAs or whatever are still playing around trying to put out, you know, just classic lager. So there's on one hand, you've got, you know, small brewers trying to put out more lagers and pilsners. Then you've got more people playing around with mixed ferment and barrels. And then you've obviously got the craze for just trying new hops and new hop and yeast combinations and bigger beers. So in terms of trends, like nothing, you know, no one seems to be interested in making English style beers anymore. No one seems to be interested in making, you know, German style beers other than, I guess, you know, lagers and pilsners. You don't see too many, you know, classic Belgian beers around in terms of doubles or Belgian golden ales. That sort of more yeast driven or, you know, old school hop thing isn't really happening at the minute. It's nice when you do find a brewery making a beer like that and go, oh, not tasted that in a while. But in terms of trends, it's just like more of everything constantly, it seems, you know. And there's always someone going, oh, I haven't made that, let's see if I can make that and sell a couple of batches of that beer. So just more of everything all the time.
Yeah, well, I had Neil Cameron on talking about how he feels that, you know, yeast is going to be the next big thing in beer. He thinks that it's probably the most unexplored aspect of brewing. You know, everyone's going crazy for the hops and hop forward beers and how much they can dry hop per liter and, you know, well pooling and the aroma. But yeast is, in my opinion, is probably one of the most important aspects of a beer.
I remember my very early days, you know, going around visiting breweries. The first time I went to Ferrell, I remember Brendan Vice, you know, one of the founders at Ferrell just saying to me, he regarded himself as a yeast farmer. And I didn't really have a clue what he was going on about. But, you know, it's all about, you know, yes, you have to be able to build a recipe and understand how things are going to work together. But essentially, if your yeast aren't doing what you want and you don't know how to make them happy, then you're not going to get what you want. And a few years back, me and this guy, Miro, who's one of the co-founders of Good Beer Week, Miro Bellini, who's the Brooklyn ambassador over here now, we did a series of three-week beer courses in conjunction with this wine educator. And we decided that the way we'd do it was we'd base it around sort of key pillars of beer. So when we actually, the first week we did was hops, because we felt that was almost the least interesting part, but it was the easiest bit to get people to understand, because it's like, it's the spice. It's the if you have the cooking metaphor, it's the spice you throw at the end, it's the aromatic, you know, it does flavor and bitterness. And we talk about all those kind of things. And we sort of talk about the different hop characteristics from around the world. Then we do malt, and then we'd finish. Week three was yeast. And we'd always say to people, this is the one we're most excited about. And, you know, we'd have different levels of interest on the courses. But some people were like, why would you be interested? And we actually called week three the enlightenment. It was like, this is where you're really going to have your mind blown. And we'd go from like, you know, we'd have a, you know, English, we'd have, you know, a fruity English ESB in there. We'd go through, you know, a couple of Belgian styles, and we'd finish with a Gerza and I think maybe a Rodenbach or what have you, and just sort of give these to people, and you'd see people going, especially with like the Boone Gerza, if they've never had something like that before, we'd be saying, oh, you know, there's aromas in there. You might say you're a bit like baby vomit, you know, whatever. And they go, oh, yeah. This just doesn't seem right. And you go, oh, just try. And you see their minds sort of trying to process why they want to have something of that character in their mouth. And then it would sort of work its magic. And then they keep going back and going, wow, you know, or it may not happen straight away, but certainly it would sort of open their minds as to what beer, the directions beer could go. And yeah, we called it the enlightenment for a reason, because we felt that was the kind of the end game for where you could get in terms of beer knowledge and beer exploration.
Yeah, well, I think it's the thing that ties it all in. Without yeast, there's no beer, and it doesn't matter how many hops you put in and all that. If your yeast isn't working, then you're not going to get those flavors and aromas and mouthfeel that you wanted from your malt and hop thing. Yeah. Decides it all, really. So keep your yeast happy and you'll have a good beer, what I've learned so far. But mate, really, really appreciate you coming on and sharing your insights about the beer media side, and not necessarily the marketing, but it does tie into that.
Yeah. I appreciate you getting me. I think, you know, there is so much to the industry now, you know, and we, you know, we are just one small part of a much bigger ecosystem. And, you know, the brewers and the beer are, I guess, you know, where everything is centered. But if you don't have good retailers and you don't have, you know, people educating and informing, and, you know, you don't have festivals that bring in new people, like, you know, you need to have all of these things working together for it to have got to the point it's at now, and for it to sort of keep moving into the future in a positive way.
Yeah. Well, any closing thoughts and advice that you'd like to part ways with?
Oh, you know, well, if there's brewers listening out there, if you haven't made contact with us, drop us a line. You know, like I said, james@craftypint.com, or send us a message through socials or whatever. Although I do find it hard to monitor messages coming in on so many platforms. I'm pretty old school, so email's good. But no, I mean, I think, you know, it's great to see what you're doing with this podcast. We've done various articles or series in the past about starting a brewery, and there is a lot of interest out there. And I think, you know, to have someone like you getting all these guests on, I think, you know, there's a lot of other people touch upon different aspects of this, but to have something dedicated that's going to become this resource for people looking to get into it, because, you know, even after all this time with so many hundred breweries out there, there's no slowing in people wanting to join in. So I think it's fantastic that you're pulling it together like this, and, you know, hopefully you're taking lots of nuggets of wisdom from it for your own project.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely given me a massive, I guess, insight into how to go about it all, and so many things that I just didn't consider. So yeah, it just seems to keep growing in terms of what I need to know. So, but yeah, once again, I do appreciate you coming on, James, and explaining about the story of Crafty Pint and Good Beer Week and all your knowledge around the beer media side. And yeah, everyone, that was James Smith from Crafty Pint. Thanks for coming on, mate.
No worries. Good to be part of it.
Thanks for listening to the Build Me a Brewery podcast. That was part four and the final episode of the marketing, design, and beer media segment. Our next segment, we move into beer distribution, where I talk with a national beer distributor here in Australia representing over 100 breweries, an import distributor in mainland China who talks about the growing craft beer market in China and the giant potential for Australian craft in the largest economy in the world, and an interesting chat with an online business-to-business platform innovating the way suppliers and customers in the wholesale distribution space do business. As always, if you are liking the podcast so far and find the content useful, please give us a follow and rating on whatever platform you're listening on. Also, follow us on all our social media handles, as well as visiting our website, www.buildmeabrewery.com.au. And much more complimentary content will be coming your way if you sign up to our mailing list. I'm Chris Hayton, your host, and this is the Build Me a Brewery podcast.